Well, thank you for coming to the very last session of the Tech Days. I think you guys are all the diehards of the convention here. My name is Erwin van der Volk. I'm the CTO of a software development company in Amsterdam called iReckon. And I'd like to take you through a little tour through a spa, you know, nice relaxation, so at the end of the afternoon. Don't forget, at the end of you know, this session, please fill out the evaluations. I mean, it's really nice for us speakers also to get a little bit of feedback on how we're doing. So, and nice for you, you can win some prizes as well. So please feel free. Before I start my talk, I have a little confession to make, is that I'm starting to feel a little bit old. I mean, you know, I'm still rocking, right? Still coding a lot. But I started coding actually, you know, I think almost 20 years ago. You know, I went through the old Netscape thing, Netscape 1, you know, Internet Explorer 3 and stuff. And yeah, I'm starting to feel my age. And, you know, obviously, you know, in the past, I came into contact with JavaScript programming. And this is typically, you know, how I feel about JavaScript programming, right? I'm always feeling like the grumpy old man who's complaining, right? Oh, it's horrible, you know, this terrible language, and it is an awful language, right? I mean, it was developed, you know, very long time ago by some people who said, we need something to interact with Java, right? Java's cool, but we need something to interact with it from a browser. Well, let's just whip this thing together and throw it out there, and then all of a sudden now a lot of people are using it. So we're using it for stuff that is never designed for, and, you know, me, I always like to complain, so I'm complaining and grouching about it. And, you know, jQuery came along. Well, jQuery solved some issues, right? It made the smooth out over a lot of browser issues, so that was nice. But still, this programming model bothered me, right? I mean, I have an example here, right? There's a button, there's a text field, and if you click the button, something happens with the text field. But, you know, the main problem which I have always with this code is that when you look at the HTML, when you look at the view, you have no idea what kind of logic is behind it. And there's some magic here in the JavaScript that kind of looks for things in the view and then manipulates the view somehow. And if you do a lot of programming like this, you end up with all kinds of spaghetti code with between your views and your classes and you know, searching within your DOM for certain elements. But fortunately, I mean, JavaScript development is becoming better, right? It's an evolution. In the beginning, you know, everything was terrible, but a lot of improvements are starting to make. And it's actually, yeah, it's getting to a point where it is actually bearable. And if you think about it nowadays, JavaScript programming is starting to become the cool new kid. In the past, I always thought, you know, .NET development, oh, that's so cool. Lots of things are happening in .NET space. And they still are. I mean, I love .NET. Don't get me wrong. But if you think now, if you look at Node.js, for example, there's a huge community growing around Node.js. And, well, this presentation is going to be about Angular. And if you see the community and the traction that Angular is getting, it's amazing. So for me, JavaScript development is the cool new kid. And I actually kind of like it nowadays. It's pretty cool. So that's what this presentation is going to be about. And, well, I clicked a little bit too fast. This is the agenda for today. We have a lot of things, and I prepared lots. No, I didn't prepare a lot of slides. Actually, I just want to dive into some code. So that's what we're going to do. This is my very last slide for today. We're just going to dive in some code, and we're just going to see what we can do with this. So here we go. All right. Well, and now I should do this, duplicate, so that you can see what I can see. That would be an improvement. There we go. Code. Excellent. Okay, so what are we going to build today? Well, I had another session yesterday morning, and I tried to create a bar there, an application that would do something with a bar. So, and in this presentation, I would like to know, okay, well, for everybody here, what's your favorite drink, so that if I meet you in a bar, I can buy you a nice drink. Right, so that's what we're going to do here. I'm going to record all of your names, record what you like to drink, and then if I meet you, that's it. So this is my database context. Right, this is just Entity Framework, code first. Should be relatively familiar, I hope. I have two tables, attendees and drinks. And on the attendee, I have some properties here, like, you know, birth date, email address, name, and with some validation properties on it. So this is pretty straightforward, you know, .NET, and it generated a database behind it. And here you see I'm recording the favorite drink, so that's actually what we're going to be doing here. So relatively straightforward .NET code. Now, if I want to use this information that I have here in the database in my web application, well, obviously, of course, I can use regular MVC, create a view, and create HTML there. But let's do it a slightly different. Let's just create a web API controller that will get this data for me. So now I won't, you know, bore you with me typing in the code for that. So here I have a web API controller. Here it is. And let me just add it. Code class. So this is just a regular, very straightforward web API controller that we're going to start using. Just gets an iQueryable drink. So if we wanted to, we could, you know, filter it on the client as well. And just to be able to see that something's happening, I put here and also in some other demos on the server, I put a thread.sleep so that we can actually see something happening, because else, you know, on your machine, it's kind of difficult to know, is it getting it from the server, or is it local cached or anything? So that's why the thread.sleep is here. Okay, but now let's go to the client where the interesting thing happens, because we want to build a single page application that will do this for us, right? That's what SPA stands for, not, you know, the spa that where you go and undress in front of other people. So let's see. What are we going to do first? Well, I want to create in Angular, because that's what this presentation is going to be about. I want to create controllers and bind those to a view. And I'll talk a little bit about why I want to do that. But first, I need to set something up. I need to tell Angular that we actually are doing something here. So that we have an application that uses Angular. So let me show you how you do that. Let me go to the layout. This is the very first thing that you have to do. Every Angular application needs at least one ng-app in it. Now, I've set it to be on the HTML element. You can set it somewhere else. Basically, this tells Angular we have an application or a module, and it's called TechBar in this case, because we're at, you know, at a tech event, and it's a bar. This kickstarts Angular for us. Okay. It's quite rare, actually, for applications to have multiple of these. You can, but you know, it's quite rare. So let's just ignore that option for now. So what do I need to do? Well, obviously, I've just, you know, named the fact that, hey, this is going to be there. But I need to have some script that will initialize this. So let me put that in here. So now that we're talking about scripts, well, one of the things which you see mostly we don't care about this. It's just helper code. In applications that are using Angular, is that they're using pure HTML, right? You just see, you know, they're using HTML views and you know, maybe Node.js as a server or anything. But I kind of like web, MVC and the platform and, you know, everything that it gives us. So what I've set up already, just to so that you wouldn't have to listen or see me do that, is I downloaded all the packages that I might need, right? I downloaded Angular, I downloaded Breeze, because that's what we're going to use. jQuery is currently in here, but you actually, for a lot of things, you don't need that. So I've downloaded all the packages, and also, just to make things easy, in the bundle config, I've already set up all the JavaScript bundles so that, well, we don't have to, watch me type this in. So this is already there in the browser. I have Breeze, I have Angular, I have, you know, all the libraries that I need. And this is actually one of the things which, you know, is quite handy, is all the JavaScript code that I'm going to be typing here today will be automatically referenced. If I add a new file, I don't have to do, you know, add script references in my pages, because here with this bundle, I have everything that's in my application folder, which is in my controller folder, and everything which is in my services folder. And we're going to be talking about what that is, right? But every time I add a class somewhere here or a file here, it will be automatically in the pages that we're going to be looking at. So if I start up this application, nothing much should happen, right? It should just start up the application and pretty much a blank screen. Right, just a blank screen, right? So that's okay. We have a blank screen. Great. Yay. Okay, so now what we're going to do. I mentioned that we will have to create a controller. Well, why in a controller? Well, Angular is a model view star framework. Well, who knows what, you know, knows a bit about, you know, the patterns, like a model view controller, model view. Who knows something about those patterns? Oh, quite a lot of people, right? Now, it's interesting because I used to be quite passionate that you need to call something, you know, it's only a model view presenter if you follow this pattern, or it's only a model view controller if you follow this pattern. And then Angular came along and they said, well, screw it, we'll just call it MV star because, you know, we're doing MV controller type things, so but it's their own flavor, so they call it MV star, fine. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a view which has just presentation logic and bindings towards my controller. Or in this case, I'm going to try and force my controllers to be a little bit more view model-like. So it's kind of more like MVVM in this case, but yeah, we're calling it a controller anyway because that's what Angular calls it. So let's do that. Let's build that. So the first thing we're going to do is create the view. Now, what are we going to do? I will show you the drink menu where you can pick and see what you would like to drink. So let me put this into index.html, and I'll explain what this does in a minute. Ooh, that's nicely formatted. And that's because I'm missing a quote here. There, that's much better. Okay, so what's happening here? I'm saying to this div, you are using a controller right now. And I'll explain what the SVM is in a minute. But you're using a controller, and we're calling you the menu controller, because this is our drink menu, which we're displaying here. So Angular will now automatically start searching for the menu controller. OK, well, let's try and find it, menu controller. Oh, it's not there yet, obviously, because I need to build it, right? So where is it? Here. Now, from Angular's point of view, a controller is a function that I'm executing. And add new JavaScript file. And I can call this file whatever I want, right? Because the file names don't really matter. And I copied in some HTML as well. That's not handy. OK. So this is my Angular controller. Technically, I don't have to do this. Technically, I could have just had a function that's called menu controller, and it will wire up everything automatically. So why am I doing this, right? The techbar variable here is what I've defined up here. This is my module, or the root of my application. I've called that techbar. OK. What else? I'm saying I'm declaring a controller called menu controller in this case. OK, well, that's fine. And I have some dependencies here. Well, I'll come back to dependencies in a minute. So what does this controller do? Well, the controller, from my perspective, needs to get me a list of drinks and present it to my view in such a way that I can data bind against it. So that's what's happening here, right? I have a variable drinks that I'm going to store stuff in. Drinks, in this case. It's an array of drinks. And I'm telling the view model, as soon as you load up, because this is just a function that gets executed, as soon as you start up, start loading the list of drinks. And this is Angular's way of directly interacting with an HTTP object. It's kind of similar to what jQuery does, right? You say the HTTP object.get and then get it. And once it's done getting, because these are asynchronous operations, you get a promise back where you can say, OK, well, once it's done loading, execute this method. And if we have errors, execute this method. OK. Well, so how do I get this $HTTP thing? And in jQuery, you might be used to just having the dollar sign or the root jQuery object that you interact with. But in Angular, you use something called dependency injection. So who's familiar with dependency injection from a .NET side? Quite a number of people, right? Excellent. Because dependency injection, really nice. Now, you can use dependency injection in Angular. It's really cool. So what I'm doing here is by saying this module or this controller requires these services. It requires scope. I'll talk about scope in just a second. It requires the HTTP service. An HTTP service, in this case, is Angular's way of talking to HTTP backends. So HTTP has a get method for getting, has a post method, put method, all those things that you would want to do to interact with an HTTP backend. And this logger, I've built my own logger service, but that's just to be able to display a little bit more things in the UI. But Angular also has a logging service which writes to the console, and that's what this thing is using under the covers. But I'll show you how to build services in a minute. OK. So this controller will get a list of drinks, and once it's done loading, bind it to my user interface. OK, well, let's see that in action then. Now let me save this file. And if I did everything correctly, it's loading up Waiting 2 seconds. Waiting 3 seconds. And we have a list of drinks. Now, as you can tell, we have a broad menu. I'm kind of a beer drinker, so it's only beer. But it's a broad menu. You can pick whatever you like. Now, this is an example of the browser having some rich functionality, right? It's going to a server, doing some things. That's not bad. So let me explain just a little bit more of what happens within the controller, because that's kind of interesting. If I go back to my view, which is here, I am now saying menu controller as view model. Now, this is a relatively new syntax for Angular, because in the past, it used to be like this, where you just said, use my controller, and then I would just say, give me a property. Well, what is it binding against now? What is it doing? Well, Angular uses this concept called scope. You can define scope on multiple levels, so each controller might have its own scope. You can create multiple scopes if you want to, and you can communicate between different scopes. And normally, well, normally between quotes in Angular, you get a scope variable like this, $scope, that's the scope, and you would assign things onto the scope. So you would say here, $scope.drinks is this. If I wanted to expose a method towards my view, normally you would say $scope.do something, right, equals. Now, this would be a method that I would expose to the outside world, and then I could call from my view, for example. Now, this is probably the reason why they didn't call it MVVM or MV something else, because the scope thing is kind of, you know, odd, right? And I kind of prefer the new syntax, which makes it a little bit more behaving like a view model, which is, you know, what we've seen here. But we'll see some more examples of what you can do with scope, how you can communicate between different controllers using scope. But actually, you don't need it, so to speak. So that's why I kind of prefer this approach. Use it as VM. Now, under the covers, we still have scope. Because if I actually VM or $scope.vm is the same thing, right? This is just a shorthand to not have to use scope, and it's just a little bit less typing, and you know, I find it communicates a little bit easier if you don't have to use scope, the scope variable for a lot of things. So I could actually remove it here and also remove it from my list of constructor parameters. So this should just work equally fine, because I'm not using scope anywhere. Does anybody have an idea why I have to declare my injection parameters both here as strings and here as parameters? Does anybody have an idea?
JavaScript doesn't have metadata?
Yeah, it has something to do with that. I mean, I could have just done this, right? I could have commented this out, don't do this, right? It's just a function, and this should work equally well. Let's see if I'm not lying. 1, 2, drink menu, here. This works equally well. So what am I doing with all this extra syntax? Well, right now I'm running a debug build on MVC, so it's not minifying my JavaScript. But the bundles would typically minify my JavaScript. And what happens when you minify JavaScript? Well, this variable, it's just a variable, will just be named something like, I don't even know what it calls, 1 or A, probably, right? And Angular does dependency injection by looking at this function and seeing what's the name of the property. And if the name matches something that it knows, right, then it will inject the variable. So this wouldn't work if I'm minifying my files. Now, there are two ways around that. One is the way that we see above here, where I explicitly name the parameters. So right now I'm saying I use these two dependencies in my class. Okay. And this won't get minified, obviously. Another way would be to create a $inject property and have an array of strings there on my view model. But yeah, I picked this approach. I mean, we could use either one, so that's fine. Okay, by the way, if there are questions, feel free to just stop me or throw something, then I know that I need to stop. But yeah, please.
VM.drinks, that VM is that same name as var?
Doesn't have to, but so the question is the VM that I use here, does it have to be the same name as the one that I used in the view? No, it doesn't. So how does it know that this is it? Well, this function in JavaScript is an object as well, where you can put properties on it. So it knows that once I execute this function, I end up with an object that has these two, in this case, this one property, this array on it. So now I have an object. It doesn't have a name, but it does have a drinks property. And in JavaScript, in my view, sorry, I am defining, where's my view? Here it is. I'm now defining a new variable, VM, and I'm putting the menu controller in that variable. So I could have just called this blah, but then, you know, I kind of like to have them have the same name, so it's clear what we're using. But if you ever need from scope to get to your view model and you're using this syntax, no problem, just use $scope dot, the name that you've called it, VM in this case, and then continue. Okay, so now this is relatively simple, right? I just have a list. What if I, for example, wanted to do something with tabs, right? So wanted to show this menu in a tab form. Well, if I wanted to do that in jQuery, this is the syntax that I would have had to use, right? I don't know if you know jQuery, but you define something, you have tabs, then you have a function here where you say, hey, transform this thing into tabs. I have some li things that probably... If you don't know jQuery UI, you have no idea what this is doing, right? It just reads something with tabs, but you could have called it something else. So this is, for me, a bit of an issue, right? This is not descriptive HTML. Well, Angular has a feature called directives. And a directive is basically a way to create custom HTML elements or custom HTML functionality and give it a name. Or you can give it a property name, or you can give it an element name. And I have a nice example of that. Well, what if we wanted to implement tabs here? Well, I'll just copy and paste in this piece of code. Let's just put it to replace this thing. Ooh, if I can click. So what is this? Tab set. I have one tab, and then I have a tab over which I'm doing ng repeat, right? Iterate over it and display the name of the drink for each drink. But now I'm creating tabs for each item here. So if you... The tab set is not a normal HTML element, right? It doesn't exist in the HTML syntax. But Angular sees this and says, hey, I know what a tab set is. I can replace that with some HTML that represents tabs. So if I refresh now, and I can close this down, I have one tab, which was statically defined, and I have a whole bunch of other tabs here that are data-bound to information that comes back from my view. Now, you can easily create your own directives, but there's also a ton of directives. If you start using Angular and you start exploring the space, there's a ton of directives out there that make your development life a lot easier. And personally, I really think that this syntax, right, open up a tab set, create a tab, you know, static tab info, this is pretty descriptive, right? Okay. So now I've just created a single page which reads information asynchronously. I could have just as easily, instead of having this, I can do input type equals text, and I can bind this to a value that I've just been data bound to. So I can do ng.-model, and well, a drink has a name property, so a drink.name. Now, if we refresh this, and we wait, I should have not done the 2 seconds, maybe. It was a good idea at the time. So now I have two-way data binding between my object and my thing. So if I change something here, you see that it also immediately changes in the place where I'm using it. Well, this is handy, right? I usually say, in the past we had to do, you know, textbox.text equals, you know, my object dot value. And that was really tedious code to write, and it was also error-prone. But with two-way data binding, you can just say this thing and these things, they belong to each other, right? And you can do all kinds of interesting things like validation, which we'll see in a little later step, and other stuff. But it's much less error-prone and much more descriptive. So if I don't have to write, you know, those manual assignment codes, I'd be very, very happy. It's just horrible code to write. Okay, so this is two-way data binding, but I'm not doing anything with regards to saving my data yet, because one thing, I haven't implemented that on my controller in the backend. I haven't implemented it in my view model yet, but we definitely want to do, you know, editing, because I want to record the list of people. Now, I could do that, right? I could create just regular web API controllers with a put and a delete and all those methods. And also for the attendees, I could do the same thing. But it is quite a lot of coding to set up the server end on that end. And then in my web Angular controllers, I would have to implement also a lot of logic to just do the put, do the gets, updates, state tracking, all those things. It's not a trivial amount of code. Now, a very short sidetrack. I mean, in the past, I used to use Silverlight quite a bit. And Silverlight was great. It's just too bad that it got killed. But in Silverlight, there was one guy with a company. His name was Ward Bell. I don't know if you've heard his name. But his company was working on a library or a system that would do basically link processing queries in Silverlight and allow them to go over to the backend for processing. And they did a lot better job of it than what Silverlight did out of the box. But when Silverlight got killed, he said, well, I still want this functionality. So he came up with a JavaScript version of that library, and that's called Breeze. And that's also what I want to use in this presentation. Now, Breeze itself consists of basically two pieces. It consists of a server piece, which you can use in MVC, and it consists of client libraries. Now, the client libraries for Breeze, they are platform independent. So if you wanted to, you could very easily use the client libraries for Breeze in a Node.js application or in, against whatever services. And you can use them against, the manually coded web APIs or RESTful APIs, no problem. But if you, Breeze or Ward Bell was a .NET developer, so he also created something that makes it a little bit easier to work from a .NET side with Breeze. So that's actually what we're going to be using here. All right, so let's walk through creating a Breeze controller and see what we can do here. Okay, so one thing to note, I have already set up Breeze. So basically that means downloading a NuGet package. It's not really that complicated. And Breeze also needs a startup function, which it automatically includes, by the way. So it's not something that, you need to code yourself. But it does need to say, hey, whenever the web application starts, register the Breeze routes. Right? This is just like an MVC route or a web API route. And by default, it differentiates them by saying, Breeze / and then something. So this is the default way that Breeze sets up routes that you can access from your browser to the server.
Do you have to make sure this route is there before any MVC routes, or doesn't it matter?
Good question, actually. Don't know. Haven't tried it. Because I don't know how I can specify ordering here, because this is just the web app activator that will start this code up, and this is the recommended way of doing it. So I don't know if this code executes before or after my my other routes. So I'm kind of assuming that this will just work. So either way, assumption. I don't know. Good question. Anyway. Here my routes are configured, so now let's create a controller. And I have it here. And it seems like a lot of code, but actually it's definitely not too bad. So let me just paste it in here. And Alt-Enter away. Gotta love ReSharper. Okay, so what is happening here? Well, I've created just an API controller, just a regular API controller, but with some annotations, this will help Breeze do its breezy magic. Now, a couple things are interesting here. Here is my database context. And using something that Breeze calls the Entity Framework Context Provider, it will wrap your context and learn about, what is in your database context. So, the context provider, in this case, is used to retrieve metadata. Well, in a minute, let's see what this metadata is about. Well, actually, let's do it now. Actually, a good So if I go to /breeze/metadata, and we wait. Again, the thread.sleep. I've also put the thread.sleep here. So now Breeze can instruct the server on what my data model looks like. For example, an SND has a key. It has some properties, a whole lot of properties with, you know, typing. So this is definitely different from just having a regular old web API controller where you just can get and post information to, but there's no contract. Well, here we have a contract of what my data looks like. And Breeze will definitely use this to generate entities, to do change tracking, to do validation, to do all kinds of things. Okay, so that's one thing that the context provider does. Another thing which it does is it will make it possible for you to query things. Now, I'm exposing two sets, right? I'm exposing a set of attendees, and I'm exposing a set of drinks, in this case. And again, they're queryable, so that you can do stuff from the client to filter, for example, well, is active, or order by, or those kind of things. And the nice thing is, Web API does this as well, but the nice thing is that those queries will actually get transformed to SQL queries and executed in my database, rather than, you know, getting everything and executing them on the client, or getting them and executing them on my server, which is, you know, worse than executing it on the client. But you see, there is only, and I copied this from a to-do application, there's only one save changes method here. And that makes things interesting, because I mentioned before that if I wanted to do this in plain old web API, which is not that old, but I would have had to write lots of these put, delete, and the post methods. And here I just have one save changes method. And the nice thing is if I start doing changes on the client, I can post an entire set of changes, deletes, insert, updates, to the server, and will get executed in a single transaction. Well, that's interesting. And it also saves, you know, well, it makes your interaction a lot less chatty. So that's nice. So let's see how that works in action. Okay, I have now created a Breeze controller, and the Breeze controller let's start using that on the server. So to do editing and those kind of things. Okay. But before we do that, actually, I've just created a single page before, right? It was just the drinks menu. But now we probably want to do the editing of attendees in a different screen, right? We want to have a list screen and want to have a details screen. Okay. Angular allows you to build single page applications, which basically mean you'll get one page and that page won't refresh until you really, really need to. One thing I usually tell people who want to start using Angular is you don't have to build it this way. Right? If you have just a single page, or if you have a big application already and you're using a lot of just regular pages, and you say, I would love to use Angular, well, you can just build these tiny little islands of SPA functionality within your page. It doesn't really matter that you don't use the routing and you don't build a real, you know, single page application. So it's, if you have an existing application, you can already start using this and just, you know, build a tiny SPA or, you know, SPA island. Anyway, it sounds exotic, doesn't it? SPA island. Tropical. Anyway, so let's do routing first. I think that's a good thing. So in order to do that, I will have to extend my usages a little bit. And I'm actually going to extend it so much that we're going to... Yes, I'm going to extend my usages a little bit. That's this one. Okay, so I'm going back into my main method here. Oh, don't select everything, because there's logic below that I'm not interested in. Okay, so this is a good point in time to start explaining what am I doing here, actually. Because this is actually the same thing kind of that was working before. Right? Again, I'm creating the tech bar variable, and here I'm defining, I am using these two modules. These are external modules that provide functionality for me. So ng-route is Angular's. Ng is typically what Angular uses as an abbreviation. Ng-route is the routing system. So I'm here declaring my techbar module uses ng-route. Okay. And I'm also declaring here that my TechBar application uses UI.bootstrap. And UI.bootstrap was using the tabs, and there's lots of other functionality within UI Bootstrap. So that's what's happening here. I'm using Angular routing. So now I'm using routing, but I'm not configuring Angular routing yet. So let's do that here. All right. So let's configure routing. So I'm telling now that, hey, I'm asking the route provider. Okay, that's an Angular class that you can use to configure your routing scheme. And I'm configuring a couple of routes. And the main important ones are, if you go to /attendees, please go to the attendees list controller and show a view called attendees list. Okay, right? So instead of what I did in the past, where I just had one page, and I, in the page I declared, this is my view, right now, sorry, this is my controller, right now I have here routing configuration, which says, you know, if you go to this URL, here's your view, and it, which is called the template URL, and here is my controller. Okay. And again, if you want to use the syntax controller as, this is the name of the variable that we're going to be using in the view to name my view. So I like calling my controllers VM. And you might wonder why I'm not just calling this view model. Could have done it, actually. That's not even a bad idea. But yeah, this is the way that we define two routes. So one route, give me the list of attendees. And if you click that one, go to a single attendee. And here you see something interesting. This is, you know, the same with MVC, where you can do the parameters. Well, instead of doing curly braces, they're doing a semicolon and then attendee ID. Okay, so we'll see in a minute how you retrieve that and how you work with that. Okay, so if I do this, I've set up routing. But what I haven't done yet is say, okay, well, where are we going to inject the views that are actually going to be doing something? Okay, well, and that is actually, let me just remove this for a second. That is what this is. ng-view is Angular's way of saying, if you need to load one of those dynamic views, this is where it will go. Okay, fine. So again, this is an MVC application, right? So my layout defines the structure of the entire page, and this is just my index page. And another thing which I've done, which you might have noticed, is in my routing, this is the URL where I can retrieve pages. Okay. Well, normally, most demos that you see with Angular, you will see /view/attendees-list.html, for example, because you can just retrieve HTML files and use them as views. Really nice, because it, you know, helps you. But in this case, I figured, well, there are some situations where you might want to be able to do some server-side logic in rendering your views. So it might also be confusing for some people, so you can just switch to HTML files. But in this case, I've done something in my home controller where I say, well, if you want to get a particular view with a name, well, then just get that view with that name. And this is the render view method. You can access that by doing /view. So in my routing, I've set it up that way. So now the attendees list just maps to a view in my home views. And it will map here, because I haven't added it yet. So let me close all but this. Let's start adding it then. OK, so I've now added the route configuration. And let's start adding my attendees list view. All right. Add view. Just regular one partial view. Attendees list. Just call it attendees list, right? I think so. Okay. So this is another MVC view. Not that much going on here. I'm assuming that I'll have a view model with a list of attendees, which I'm repeating over, right? So each time, for each attendee, I'm displaying this piece of HTML, just an li with some information here. By the way, these two curly braces, I haven't explained that in the beginning. This is Angular's way of doing like a response.write. But it's kind of a smart response.write, because I can also evaluate expressions here. I could do, right, the 1 + 1. Oh, it's dimming. I think I kicked off my power supply. That's it. My screen was dimming here. You didn't see that probably. But anyway, 1 plus 1, this will print out 2, because it can. You can also do functions here. I could do vm.do something, and then it will evaluate this function. So it's quite handy in quite a lot of situations if you just want to print out some information. So that's what's happening here, right? For each attendee, I'm displaying a link, an href. Go to hashtag attendees, because if I was to use just slash attendees, it would go to the real, you know, it would refresh my page. And obviously, I don't want it to refresh my page. I just want to load it this way. And then with an attendee ID here. OK. And we'll go to the rest in a minute. OK, so what I need to do is I will need to build a controller that will do this for me, and hopefully also use Breeze, because that's a nicer way of doing this. So if you were to build a regular application, is it a good idea to put your data access logic in your views? No, right? In your UI logic? Not really. So why would we do that in a JavaScript application, right? That's bad practice. So, but a lot of people are doing that, right? If you're using jQuery and you have a button, and on the button click, you do an AJAX call to a server, right? But effectively, you're mixing up all kinds of responsibilities there. And one of the things which I really like about Angular is that they've thought out, you know, separation of concerns. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to create a service. And a service is nothing more than a piece of code that provides a service to my application. Right? So it's nothing. It doesn't have to do anything with, you know, web service calls. I'm going to access some piece of functionality, and we're encapsulating that within a service. So in this case, I'm going to call it the data service. So, but I also have a logger service. There are, you know, services in Entity Framework, like Angular for logging for all kinds of information. So let me just put this in here, and I kind of like, oh, I already have a file here, data service. How convenient. Okay, so what's happening here? I'm telling Angular, the module tech bar, and I could have also done here tech bar, that would have worked as well. Create me a data service. And you do that by saying .factory. Okay. And my data service again has a bunch of dependencies. It needs Breeze, okay. Needs an entity manager factory, which is something to do with Breeze. I'll explain in a minute. Needs the logger and needs the root scope. Again, I'll explain that in a minute. And the last parameter in your list of dependencies is the function, the JavaScript function, that will actually create my service. Right? So that's why this is not in quotes. And this function is defined below here. Okay. So again, it's JavaScript, so you create classes by building functions. And in this case, I am building a function here. Now, you might have noticed in my other controller as well that I'm kind of using this pattern here. And they call this in JavaScript the revealing module pattern. Because here I'm defining a variable, I'm adding stuff to the variable, and in this case I'm returning the value variable. And this has the only thing that I've defined here, this is my public contract, so to speak. These are my public properties, public methods, and public API. And everything else that happens inside here is kind of private. Right? So this gives me the option of doing, you know, private and public functions, which is, you know, quite nice to be able to do that. I mean, normally you wouldn't be able to do that in JavaScript. Okay, so I have a data service here, and it has two methods. Get attendees. I could have also built a function called get drinks, but, you know, we're already doing that in the other controller, and we're doing it directly. So, and I have a method called hasChanges. But we'll look at hasChanges when we go into editing as well. But the important thing here is, okay, we want to do something with Breeze, right? Now, Breeze, the way that the client-side part of Breeze works is you will need to create an entity manager. And the entity manager in the client is pretty similar to what the data context is on the server. It is the object that keeps track of all your object references, keeps track of changes. And also, if you want to create a new object, right, a new attendee in this case, you will ask the entity manager, give me a new object. Okay. And this is just a little bit, form. I mean, there's also a public accessible function here, which you can call to because sometimes you'll need to call a static method on Breeze. And it's kind of more your preference if you want to inject this or just use the static function. I kind of like to do it, to inject it. But effectively, what I need to say here is I will create a new entity manager. And this entity manager will be alive for the entire lifetime of my scope or my application. So only when I do Control F5 and refresh will I get a new entity manager. Well, the nice thing about that is that this thing can also do something like a first-level cache, so to speak. Right? Every entity that I load into this entity manager will be there. And if I say, give me this entity again, it will just be there already, so I don't have to query the server again. It can also, if you want to, do caching, real caching, right? Persistent caching. But you know, there's only so much time that we have, so I won't show that in this demo. But you can actually let the entity manager do also caching. Okay, so we have an entity manager, right? Because I've created that. Now the nice thing is that we can create queries, right? Real queries. Right now I'm just saying, give me an entity query from attendees. But I could also do, and actually that's something that I'm not doing that here yet. But I could also say here, dot where, and then I is active, comma, equals, comma, true. So Breeze in this case gives me some kind of link-like capabilities. It's not real link syntax, obviously, because you know it's not typed and it's not. But it gives me link-like capabilities to compose queries. And I can extend these queries because up until now, I still just have a query object, which I explicitly need to execute, just like I would do with Entity Framework. So that's really nice, right? I'm going to remove this because I don't even think I'm actually using the isActive property here. But you get the point, right? I can build queries in my browser and then start executing them. And that's what's happening here. I'm saying to the manager, execute this query for me. And now, and this is typical for asynchronous programming in JavaScript, you get back a promise. Now, a promise in JavaScript terms is pretty similar to what you would get when you, it's kind of like a task in C#, right? It's something that will happen in the future. And you can do promise.then and then execute it. There's no await in JavaScript, unfortunately. But you can do .then and then it will do it. But something that's quite nice is that you can say here, well, you know, if there's an exception, catch it here, right? I've centralized exception handling in my service here so that I can log the exception and I don't have to log it in all the views that I'm actually using. And another thing which I'm doing here, which I think is quite handy, and we'll see in a minute what that looks like, is I'm also saying whenever you start loading data, I am sending a message to another controller to say, start loading data. And that will actually show a progress bar that something's happening. And when you're done loading, in a finally a section, I will say loading is complete. And in this case, I will broadcast here, loading is complete. So if we have time, I hope we have time for that, I will show you a little bit more about the broadcasting and communicating between two different controllers. But yeah, you see that you're doing that by calling rootscope and then $broadcast. But I'm hoping that I have time to go into that in a little bit more detail.
Question about the promise. Is it,
yes.
Is it from Angular or is it from Breeze?
Okay, so the question is this promise from Angular or is it from Breeze?
It looks like from Breeze.
So we have here somebody who already knows a little bit about it, apparently. nice. No, good question. But no, it's I'm not dishing you. Okay. Now it's actually a great question. By default, Breeze uses the Q library, and by default, Angular uses also a variant of the Q library, but it's a different one. Oh, that's horrible, right? So if you wanted to use Breeze and Angular together normally, right, without some magic, you would have to kind of translate between the promises from Breeze to the promises of Q. So that's why I was saying, well, hey, you probably know something about it. But so that's a horrible experience, right? That's just a lot of code that you don't want to write. Well, the nice thing is that the Breeze team catches on to the fact that Angular is becoming a really, really popular library. So they've built this glue library, so to speak, that does two things. One is it will make sure that Breeze uses Angular's Q library or Angular's Promises library. So right now, as you say, these are the promises that Angular, Breeze will return an Angular promise. So that's nice, because then in Angular, everything just works as you would have expected it. The second thing which it does, and it's really important, so it's nice that you asked this question, because it's a good timing. Breeze was originally built for using with Knockout. Now, who's used Knockout before here? Quite a lot of people. So Knockout, and some other libraries as well, I think, the way that they work is that each property is not a property, it's a function, right? Because those functions, they do the change notification for you. And this is just a problem because, you know, JavaScript, being the horrible language that it is, doesn't have, you know, getters and setters for properties. Now, Angular doesn't use that technique. The way that Angular does change tracking is by evaluating whenever something happens in a controller or in an action that Breeze does, or in a queue action, after that's done executing, it will look over all the properties of all your models and then see, has something changed? And if something has changed, it will update your view. There is a small downside to that, and that is performance. Now, I've heard people complaining about the performance of Angular, and it is true that if you have a massive application, right, hundreds of thousands of rows or thousands of rows within your screen, and you're all data binding that together, you might have to do some tricks to get that to perform nicely. However, for most typical applications, it's just really fast enough. And the nice thing is, it's just such a simple programming model. Because right now, if I get back an object from Breeze here, I can just look at it in the debugger and I see that, you know, my attendee has a name property and that name property has a value. I can look at that, I can examine that. Whereas if you get back a Knockout object, right, you'll have to call a function, right? If you look at the object itself, you see that it has functions that need to be evaluated. So that's just not a nice experience. And I'm always struggling when I'm using Knockout. Okay, well, is this now a regular JavaScript object? Is it a Knockout object? Here, you just have plain old JavaScript objects. Really much simpler to work with. There are some, you know, limits if building, you know, two big applications, maybe. But for most things, it just works really, really fast. Okay, so that was a good question. Thank you. Okay, great. So let's where were we? Okay, so I've created the Breeze controller, so the data service, and this data service now is one method. Give me the list of attendees. Okay, so let's start using that in a real controller. And I don't think I have the attendee list controller yet, so let me just copy and paste that one in. Again, it's just a controller. So let me, just for time's sake, I'm just going to put it into the same file as this controller. You know, it doesn't matter which file you put it in, right? It's just JavaScript in this case. So, ooh, and I did a copy and paste error here before when I was building my, good that I'm seeing that now. So I have an attendees list controller here. And this one has a little bit more functionality, right? My view model here exposes a list of attendees. Okay, that's nice. Has a function for new, has a function for save changes, undo changes, has changes, right? These are all functions that I might want to execute at some point in time to either, you know, create a new one or save it or do something with it. I'm also saying I would like a data service. So I'm no longer getting the $HTTP service to query a backend service. Now I'm saying, give me the data service. And my data service has those friendly methods that I could call, like get and then get attendees. And you can see that it's just a promise. You know, once it's done, call the attendees loaded method. And in there, I'm just setting the VM attendees property to the result. And you're also seeing me doing some logging here. Okay. So that's the interesting thing, the main interesting thing here. So if I didn't make a stupid mistake or a typo, if I do here #attendees, this should just work. Oh, right, I need to load up the screen first. And now that I think about it, right, this is just my root. Great. And everything going okay? It says, oh, sorry, I skipped over a little bit. I changed the ordering a little bit, and then I forgot to configure Breeze. You do need to do some configuration for Breeze on the server. So I forgot to do that because I switch the ordering around a little bit. So let's configure Breeze, and I'll talk you through the configuration of Breeze. It's not that much once you know what you need to do. So let me just remove this, and it's slightly more code. Okay, so in this case, again, I'm creating a techbar module and saying you use breeze.angular and breeze.directives here. So this basically tells Angular from, hey, there's Breeze. And this also provides immediately that glue that I just mentioned that, you know, will make sure that Breeze uses the right queue library and the right way of working. Now, I will need to kickstart Breeze, so I will need to say techbar.run run the Breeze module. And in this case, you could have some initialization logic here. For example, tell Breeze to start pre-caching some information, right? If you have a lookup list that always need to be there in your application, this is your startup point for Breeze, where you can configure Breeze. Handy point to know. Okay. And then I need to configure my entity manager factory. Okay, so that's what this thing's doing. Okay, so what are we telling here? Well, we're saying right now that this is the location where my Breeze service lives. So we're just getting the location from the browser. I could also configure an external location if we wanted to. But in this case, I'm saying, well, let's just use the location for the... Oh, actually, it's this whole thing. Just use the browser's location to find it. And then it's, again, service root. That's what we define up here. /breeze/techbar. So that is the route that tells Breeze, this is where you can find the metadata, and this is where you can find the save changes method and all those other methods. Okay. And then we are configuring, again, a factory. This is the entity manager factory that will build the new service for us. So this is what you need to configure Breeze, and it's not that bad. And what you see here is just for validation. I'll talk about that in a minute, about validation. So let's see. Hopefully now I've configured Breeze correctly. Has changes is not defined. I did some copy and pasting here. So I'll copy and paste the has changes function in a minute, so return true. False. Let's assume that there are no changes. Okay. Query failed method is not defined. I did some horrible copy and pasting here, didn't I? So where is my query failed method? Here it is. No, this is actually, because it was in the data service. Okay. Right. I was complaining here, actually. You see the squiggly? And nobody was telling me, right? I forgot to have this method. Thank you. Just kidding. It's my fault. I'm to blame. So, but hold your tomatoes, please. Okay. So obviously, you know, when the query fails, I need to have a method, and I want to have some logging if the query fails, so that we see it on screen if there's something going on. Great. So now we have some data, and I still have an error. Why do I have an error? Well, let's just debug this, okay? Because it's not that bad, actually. It goes wrong in my attendee. Where is it? App controllers. Well, it's obviously, I shouldn't have put this in the same function. It goes wrong after we've retrieved the attendee. So let's see. This is where we're going wrong. And loading 2 seconds. No, an error has occurred. Check the. Is that all it's saying? Well, I hope that's the issue. We can't find my web server. So it is loading something. It's getting back with my list of attendees here. Response, right? This is just my list of attendees. There's something I did wrong with my copy and pasting. I put the breakpoint in the wrong controller. I knew I shouldn't have done this. And I didn't have a logging statement in here. So that's why we don't see anything in the console either. 1, 2, what's the error here? metadata fetch not defined. So I did some butchering in here to make sure that metadata fetch is not defined. Okay, so I need to get rid of this. Actually, if you want to do add new record, you need to know if the metadata has been retrieved or not yet. So that's probably what's going on here. Right, we get data. Great. Finally. So right now I have a list of data, and this data came from Breeze. And I encapsulated this functionality within a service, and that made it, you know, made my controllers easier to work with. And if I'd done the due diligence of having exception handling in here with loggers everywhere, I would have seen that somewhere. You can also see here, you know, I'm doing logging here. You see log messages in the top saying, hey, we loaded 3 attendees, we have data complete, all these things. So, okay, that's handy to know. So now we've retrieved data, but if I click this, I haven't implemented yet the methods to get drinks and get attendees and those kind of things, so we'll have to implement those. So let's do that. And I want to make sure that I know where I am in my demo script. Okay, here is the new data service that has a little bit more functionality, and this actually does have all the query failed and sure metadata loaded and those kind of functions. So let's go to the data service, override this, and let me show you what has been changed. So there's quite a lot more functionality in here now. I have a method to get one attendee, and I'll show you what that looks like. I've a function to get drinks, because I need to show the list of drinks in order to create a list box. And again, there's the undo changes, save changes, those methods. So how do you, well, no, let's, this should be enough to give me, you see now we're loading data. That's actually what the thing on the background was doing. And once it's done loading, here's my attendee, here's me. Right, and if I click, you can see that it's loading my data. Here's my other user that I've created for test purposes. Okay, so this works, right? Now, how am I loading a single attendee? I'm creating one of these queries. So I'm basically saying to Breeze, give me an attendee where the ID equals this, and then execute it. There is also another option to be able to say fetch by ID, but then you get slightly different. I just use this one. Doesn't really matter that much. So this is nice, because if I now say, well, and you can see that actually, you see my route here is /attendee/11. And if I go back, the way that I've built it is that it will always refresh my list, but it's not really getting the entire page anymore. If I look at the network trace, it is a single page application, right? And the delay shows you that it's doing something, but it's just retrieving my view. And if I go back, it's not retrieving my view anymore. It's just retrieving the list of attendees. So it is a single page application. So if I click new attendee, right now I'm going, and this is how I know whether it's new or not, I've passed in the parameter 0. That's one way that you can do this. So let's look at what that looks like within my attendee controller, right? Because that's the one that's doing the single retrieval. And actually, it's also where you can see the route params. Okay. Again, using the revealing module pattern, right? This is all the functionality that's there in my view model. There's a list of drinks that you will need to be able to choose from the favorite list of drinks. The currently editing attendee, and I will show you what it looks like with data binding and validation and stuff. I have an OK button, which needs a function. I have an undo button, which needs a function, right? OK, undo. Delete button, which needs a function. It's there, delete attendee. I have a go back method in the top here, which allows me to go back. Okay. So how do you read the parameters that you've defined? Well, that's where this $route parameters comes in. So $route params, that's where you can query, okay, well, what's the attendee ID? And if it's 0, create a new attendee. And if it's not 0, right, then get the attendee. And from that point on, my function is the same, right? On attendee loaded. Because on attendee loaded, what I'm doing is just saying viewModel.attendee, here it is. And this is actually the reason why I didn't do fetch, because if you get back a list, right? You can, I have one method that will bind it to me, and if I do fetch by ID, I only get back one record, so I would have needed to have two onetcd loaded methods, which is a bit of a pain. Well, not that much of a pain, actually, but anyway. Okay, so here I can create a new one, and you can see that there's some validation going on here. So let's... creating an attendee, that's actually an interesting thing, because in JavaScript, I could have just created a new object and then put that in my UI and done data binding, and that would have actually worked. The problem with that is that it doesn't do change tracking at that point in time. So similarly, if you want to do an entity framework, if you want to create a new object and you want to start interacting with that, and you will have to create a new object and then add it to your data context, and from that point on it's tracked, well, you'll have to do something similar with Breeze. So you'll see that here, right? The new attendee function. I'm calling entityManager.createEntity, and this will create a new attendee for me, which is now completely tracked by the entity manager. So if I call save changes, it will try to save this towards the database. So what's all this with queue and ensuring metadata and stuff? Well, I need to explicitly tell Breeze, hey, start downloading the metadata. It will download the metadata if I execute a query. So once I've executed a query, I don't have to do that anymore. But if I just control F5 this page, my metadata still needs to be downloaded, right? So that's why I'm taking this approach. I've created a method here that will say, you know, make sure the metadata is here. And again, I'm using the promises from queue to do this. So what's happening here? I'm saying if the metadata has already been retrieved, well, just return immediately. That's what this does, right? Deferred.resolve. It's a bit cryptic, but this is just, once you've done this a couple times, you'll get used to it. But if I do need to start loading metadata, right, because it's not been fetched before, I will tell the manager, start fetching metadata, and once you're done, complete the promise. So this is now an asynchronous method that may or may not go to the server to get metadata. Okay, so it's an asynchronous method. And here I can say in my new attendee method, here I can say that, again, call the asynchronous method. When you're done, so async await would be an example. Once you're done, then we can create the attendee and return it. And in this case, we're returning it as if it's a collection. Okay. So right now I've created an attendee and it will be change tracked. Okay, that's nice. So I can start changing things. Now the last thing I want to start explaining is, okay, well, how do you do, you know, editing of an entity and validating those entities? So if I open up my attendee view, this is basically a Bootstrap form, right? And if you know, or if you don't know Bootstrap, Bootstrap is just a CSS library that will make it easier to create a little bit nicer looking forms than I could have created manually. So there's a little bit of ceremony here with, you know, div class, control group, and those kind of things, but that's just to create, you know, things that kind of look like this. Still doesn't look that well, but you know, I'm not a designer, but it's, you know, it's good enough for me. But the interesting thing here is, again, I am doing data binding. So you'll see that here. ngModel equals, ngModel, bind this control to the name. Bind this control to the email address. Bind this control to the birth date. Right? So all these properties you can see from your HTML code where they're bound to in my view model. And these properties, well, they will align, so to speak. If I want to click a button, I don't think I've mentioned that before. If you want to call functionality from your view to your view model, you would just simply say ngclick. I'm dragging something here. ngclick and call this method. Okay. There's other stuff that you can do, right? For example, disabling. In this case, I'm saying you can. This control is disabled if there are no changes, and that's handy for, you know, the functionality here. Right now, it's enabled because there is something here. But if I it's loading the entity. Right now it says, hey, this is not enabled, but as soon as I make a change, these become enabled, right? So that's change tracking all at once and immediately, you know, do we have changes to be saved? Okay, well now if I start saving this, it actually fails, but it doesn't show a validation method. That's nice. Did I forget to put the validation attribute on here? No, I didn't. Well, it says that there aren't unsaved changes. I can't save if there are errors, right? That's one of the things that you might want to do. Now, Angular has built-in validation support. However, the way that you do that is in your HTML, you'll have to say, this is a required field. This is an email address, so validate it as an email address. Well, that's bad, right? Validation is business logic. So validation needs to be, first of all, on the server, right? So you've seen in the tech bar context, you see here we have properties on this which will do validation. And I want these validation methods from the server to be propagated to the client and displayed there nicely. And the UI just needs to know these properties will be validated at some point in time. That's one thing. Secondly, what I want with validation is I might need to add a little bit of validation that's just client-side. Okay, well, you can do that as well in Angular. So, in Breeze, I need to say. And this is, in the main service, this is what this is doing, right? I'm now saying, and this is another Breeze library that you can import to configure, and it has a really descriptive name. It's the Z Directives Config Provider, but this configures the Z directive, which apparently is the validation. Why did they call it V? I don't know, but it's that's the name they gave it. And this is the template that you're seeing for validation errors. Okay, so I'm basically now saying if there are validation errors, this is the template that we're using. And the only thing that I will have to do within my view is to say, well, this particular control does something with validation. So again, this, what I've highlighted here, is an Angular directive that will start injecting some HTML in this particular location to say, this control does something with validation. And what that will do is, in this case, this is a required field. So if I remove this, it will say the name field is required. And obviously, you can control that, right? You can say, you can control the property, and you can make sure that it's called the way that you want it to be called. Also, if I do something like this, and I start saving this, and this should be a valid email address. If I click Save now, and I hope I wired it up correctly. Did I forget to copy and paste in some additional validation logic? I did. I need to initialize validation. Oh, that's nice. So let's do that. That's one thing I forgot, and that's why it wasn't actually saving before. I need to initialize validation, and I just figured a nice point in time is after my metadata has been loaded. So this is the place where, you know, my metadata has now been loaded, and I'm initializing validation. And another thing which I'm doing while initializing validation is also pushing in an email address validator. So this is adding client-side validation to my server-side validation. So now, hopefully, if I reload this and I change this to be 2000 and I save, goes back to the server, and we should get a server validation error now that says, hey, you will have to be at least 18 years old in order to do this. So this is, I think this is a really nice way of data binding between client and server and having validation errors on the server. And the only thing I need to do on my client is to say, this field will be validated. And actually, all of your fields will likely be validated. And there's no way that you can forget a server-side validation. And there's also no way that you can save changes to the server. It comes back with validation errors and you just crash because, you've forgotten to implement a particular validation error. So I kind of like this. This is a nice approach. Now, unfortunately, I'm running a little bit out of time. So I would have liked to show, okay, how am I doing the cross-module communication, but that's possible. And there's a lot more that you can do with Breeze with regards to querying, but yeah, running out of time. There's a lot more that you can do with Angular, with writing custom directives and stuff. But for now, yeah, this is hopefully been a useful introduction to Angular combined with Breeze. So in summary, well, you know, this is what Angular does, this is what Breeze does, and I hope you had a good time, and I hope it was interesting for you. And well, if there are any questions, you know, please feel free to, time's up, but please feel free to come here and ask me. All right, thank you very much for your attention.